Good morning. Well, we're going to take the rest of the time today to talk to you about... Was my little fan saying, yeah, Daddy? Aw, thanks. we're going to talk to you about our trip to Haiti. I want to start out with this. We've had some people say, why Haiti? Why not here at home? Don't we have enough poverty here at home? Don't we have enough people who need help here at home? Something like that. And the truth is, yeah, there is poverty. There are people who need help here in our own country. But as you're going to be hearing from people who went on the trip, the level of poverty that we experience is really nothing compared to the level of poverty that most of the world experiences. And maybe you'll see a little glimpse of that this morning as we talk about our trip. And maybe you might just start kind of rethinking along those lines. We have tremendous resources and opportunities here to help people. Our church helps people. I don't know if maybe some of you didn't know that we have a Helping Hands program where we do food, and if we can, we would, if we have the funds, we can help out with rent and bills and stuff like that. We have a mission here in town that if you want, you can get a hot meal every day of the week, over in Haiti, in other parts of the world, that's not possible. So anyway, I just wanted to say that and hope that you might rethink your views and ideas about poverty. So we went to Haiti. We called it Hope for Haiti, and I'm just going to quickly tell you what we've done, and then I'm going to give the rest of the time to everybody else to kind of tell you what has happened in their lives as a result of our trip. And we did quite a few different things. This is our team. Some of us are not here today. I don't see Dave. Maddie here. He is not here. Patty couldn't make it. And then right by Patty on the left, and in between Patty and Mandy is my cousin Lisa from Oregon. And she kind of just fit right in the group. A few of the things we did. First day, we did some construction. Right there you see us working on a foundation. We don't have time to go into it, but you can ask these guys what it's like building a foundation in Haiti. It's way different than here in America. We did some painting. The mission was going to have, or actually had this week, a huge convention. And so we helped kind of spruce up the grounds. We did some painting for them. We bought about, I think it was over 500 pounds of food, $500 worth of food, which was, I don't know how many pounds, but we fed, you said it, over 125 families. And there you see us packing it up and Ken handing food out to someone. We did two vacation Bible schools. One was a tremendous flop and the other one was a success. If we don't say anything about that, just ask. We'll tell you later on. Louie and I both got the awesome opportunity to preach. It was very, very fun and very educational. We did a leadership seminar, or a leader seminar. We actually taught how to study the Bible to some pastors, some of the translators there at the mission, and then there were some other people who had just heard in the community that we were doing this. We helped in the pharmacy. We helped inventory supplies. Melissa played doctor for a day, and I think she's going to tell you a little bit about that. That's what we did. I mean, there's a few other things, but that's pretty much what we did. But that, I got to tell you, that was a lot of stuff for this trip. The one thing we learned when we got there was nothing goes according to plan. You got to be really flexible and just go with the flow. So anyway, I'm going to open it up to who is supposed to go here? Ken, to start us out.
Where's the... There you go. One of the first things I noticed when I got in country is the contrast between the beauty and the poverty there. You know, looking at these pictures, you see it's definitely a beautiful country. But at the same time, even at this one, I think we had gone to the Vacation Bible School. That was an actual success. And I was standing on top there and took this picture, and you could just see the level of poverty that is in that country. All the tents and the heat and, you know, this is just normal. You see people just walking around. It was hard to look at. You know, the kids, if you notice, every place you go there, it's just rocky. You know, there's rocks all over the place. And you see this little kid here, and most of them that I saw out in those areas didn't have shoes. You know, when they come up to you, one of the first things they ask for is money, a ball for soccer, which is really important, and sandals, and not necessarily in that order. I wasn't going to talk about the Haiti Christian Mission is doing a lot to touch that country. They're doing so many things with schools and things like that. And a lot of times when there's problems in the community, the people will come up to the Christian Mission and ask for help. Well, this day this guy came in and he said that there were two kids that was really bad. Their parents had died in the earthquake, and Betty, who was kind of the leader of the house there, could she come and take a look for them? And Betty asked, you know, if we wanted to go. So I said, yeah, okay, you know, we'll go up there. And imagine this heat out in the desert, and that's pretty much where you live. There's no AC, there's no water. You know, it's not uncommon to see kids walking around with buckets of water and doing that a couple times a day just to live. Well, anyway, we went up to this small little place, and the first thing I saw was this little boy naked. Pretty much didn't have anything. He was just sitting on a side by himself. And, you know, they started talking in Creole, so I really didn't understand what she was saying. But she said there was two kids, and so she they called this little girl out. And it's really hard to see children suffering. She was handicapped, and she basically came out walking on her hands. And, you know, immediately I had all intentions of taking pictures because I thought everyone should see this. But at the time, I just couldn't. It was just amazing at the poverty and how these kids live. And, you know, then we talked to Betty talked to her, and then she talked to the other boy. And same thing, he all he really had was a shirt, so they put a shirt on while we were talking to him. But his legs were also, there were flies and ants on it and biting, and this is every day, you know. And, you know, I was talking to Betty and saying, well, what can we do? You know, can we just give him some money or something now? We're only here. And she said, it's not going to really do anything. It may help today, but this, you know, one, someone may even take it from him. You know, that's just the poverty level. But what the Haiti Christian Mission is trying to do is basically start orphanages. They do schools and things like that. So for me, that just to see the children and the way they live and the things that they go through, and it was just really a hard thing to do. And, you know, so for me, the trip was awesome. It was sad. It was exciting. It was scary, you know, but as Brian said, you know, I've had a couple of people say the same thing. You know, why Haiti? We have poverty here, not on that level. We have no clue sometimes, I think, the blessing that we have just by living in the United States.
Hi, I'm Brandon. I'm going to talk a little bit more about what he was talking about the two kids and my point of view. And when we got there, the little girl came out and it looked like she was just crawling. And I was like, why is this girl crawling? Because she looked like she was like 7 or 8. And then I realized that she was paralyzed, and my heart started to feel this pain that I've never felt before. And she told us the girl's story about how she was outside when the earthquake happened, and her parents were inside, and they died in their house. And I was just thinking how I would be in that position. Like, I was on the verge of crying, but I didn't want to, because I felt if I was going to cry in front of her, she would be like, why is he crying? He has nothing to cry about, you know? And I thought, like, what would happen if that happened to me? I honestly think that I would have given up and not tried to, like, live or care about anything anymore, because if the people I loved the most and they took care of me died and I couldn't do anything about it. Sorry. I would be so heartbroken. I don't think I would be able to do anything. And then we went over to the boy, and his, like he said, his legs were all cut up. There's bugs and stuff in them. And that part of the trip meant the most to me. It made me realize how lucky I am to be able to run and play soccer. And, like, even walk. God really showed me that I really am gifted with things that I take for granted. And that night I couldn't even eat my food without, like, shaking like crazy. My hands were, I couldn't control them, and it was hard for me to eat, and I cried myself to sleep that night. And this really goes to show you that we have issues in our lives, but when you see someone else that has to drag their body over really bumpy, rocky, sharp roads to wherever they want to go, and they can't play with everybody, and I thought to myself, what am I really complaining about? And so now I have I got a reality check in Haiti, and I'm really glad I went. And yeah. Okay.
The Chaz is really proud of our teens. They did a great and awesome job there in Haiti. We were told that nobody in Haiti was unaffected by the earthquake. Everybody had lost a relative or a friend or someone. Here's just a few of the pictures of the devastation. We actually went through Port-au-Prince on a Sunday after church. And, you know, at first I was taking pictures. We were all kind of taking pictures of the devastation. But it just finally got so overwhelming, I had to just stop taking pictures because it was just everywhere. There was rubble everywhere. And people were just living around this, you know. They have no way of cleaning this up. They're just pushing it into big piles, you know, up against the road. There are streets that are lined with tents. I mean, it was just unbelievable. This is the presidential palace. You might have seen pictures of this. There's a lot of pictures all over the web, news about the presidential palace. And I guess the president, when this happened, came out and he was crying that he had no place to live or anything like that. And, you know, we all got out, and I think most everybody was taking pictures of the presidential palace. And I turned around, and this bottom picture is a national park. that is right across from the presidential palace. And the park is huge. I got on Google Maps and I looked down. I mean, it's just huge. The whole thing is full of tents. It's just completely filled with tents. And that's just one shot. I got two shots. I took one going this way and one going that way. It's just incredible. Tents all over the place. So that is the devastation, the destruction, the devastation is great. Nobody was unaffected by that. And you just heard a, unfortunately heard a story of two kids who were definitely affected by it. Tom, I'm going to let you come up and talk here.
Bear with me, guys. I kind of made some notes because if I don't, I'll forget some of the things that I wanted to talk about. Okay, I'm going to goof it up already. Which button is it, Brian? Okay, sorry, guys. All right, well, listen, I had six pictures I wanted to show, and I think it's more, I mean, Brian touched on it. There's 9 million people that live in Haiti, and, you know, there's 9 million reasons why we should be helping Haiti, but the picture that I showed really kind of goes with the plight of Haiti. Some of the numbers, I pulled this up, roughly, Haiti's roughly the size of Maryland. Voodoo's their number one religion, followed by Roman Catholicism. It's the poorest country on the Western Hemisphere, and that was before the earthquake. I see Rachel here today, and many of us have been on missions trips to Mexico, and, you know, and I thought, boy, Mexico, you know, you can see the struggles that Mexico is going through, and they do, believe me, but I have never seen anything like I've seen in Haiti. Their average income is basically $500 a year, and that equates to about $10 a week that they live on, and yet the prices are still high. They estimated 100 to 230,000 people were killed in the earthquake. This picture right here is just, you know, I'm not going to show all the pictures of the buildings in the rubble, but I wanted to show this picture, and I'm going to come back to it a little bit later. I took this. What they did is after Sunday we had our service, and the interpreters and the folks from the mission said, hey, let's take you into Port-au-Prince. We were staying in a little town called Fond Parisien. I think I'm saying it right. So we all loaded up in the back of these trucks, and we headed into Port-au-Prince. And most of the homes, as you're going to see, the Haitians build their homes out of cement and brick. And the roofs are basically cement 4 to 6 inches thick. And I really think that really kind of lended to the devastation when the earthquake hit. So that I'm hitting this right, Brian. Which button? Right one. Thank you. One of the interpreters, I'm showing this picture, it just looks like a dirt mound. But it kind of impacted me pretty hard because right across the street we had stopped, there was a university. And this university, and you're going to see pictures of it, somebody may have pictures of it in their presentation. But directly across the street was this 9-story university. And when the earthquake hit, it killed 3,000 people in that building alone. And the gentleman that was with us, it was the interpreter, said that he was there that day, and he just happened to be in a building or outside somewhere close to it. But what impacted me about this is right across the street. Port-au-Prince is like San Diego, where they have a lot of the homes built up on the side of mountains. And that mound of dirt you see underneath that are a lot of bodies. And I don't show that to, you know, just to pay any kind of homage to that or anything, but other than the fact that just the devastation and the plight that these people have had to go through, that just impacted me, that 3,000 people died just in that one building alone. This is a good. This is the building site. You know, and that's not really that big. It may was maybe a half an acre that they had this building on. And that's what's left of it. The mission that we, the Haitian Christian mission that we were there with, they started out, and it's Pastor, Elma Butcher's prophet. He started out with one church, and you're going to, I don't know if somebody has a picture of that church, but they now are at 59 churches and growing in Haiti, which is awesome. But the reason why I wanted to show you this picture is this is one of the mission schools that another one of our interpreters that was taking us on the trip was with us. And he basically had to jump with the children from the second floor of the building on the left somewhere. And but I kind of want to talk about the good of it. Right across the street was a little parking lot. And what they've done is they've made a makeshift school. And they're just continuing. And, you know, that was awesome to see. I mean, despite all the devastation and everything, they're continuing on. Ken already showed a picture of a tent city. This was one that that I took. You see this all over. I mean, you can't drive a short distance without seeing an area where they have set up tent cities. The mission that we were at, right behind it, you know, we had the picture of the food that we passed out. That went to the people that were living in the tents behind the mission right there. But the thing that probably disturbed me, I did not go with Ken and Melissa and Brandon when they went to find these two children and a possible orphan that had been orphaned from the earthquake. But as we were coming back out, I was riding in the back of the truck, and it was pretty close to this tent site. But and nobody on the team saw it. And but there was a man about 30 plus years of age on the side of the road, close to this tent city right here, stark naked. And you know, a lot of things were racing through my mind, but the thing that bothered me is, number one, he didn't have any clothes on, but the main thing that bothered me was there were hundreds of people around this man walking as if nothing was going on, or that there was nothing wrong, or that, you know. And I think that the earthquake, you know, whether this man was mentally challenged, whatever the issue was, it just... you know, I hadn't seen what they had seen earlier, but just seeing that really bothered me, because I just thought, you know, these people are in survival mode. And to see that, just, you know, and just to see that, just really, really bothered me. I think that, if you guys remember the first picture I showed you of the house or the building, and it was kind of hanging over what looked like a block wall, basically. Well, that was a major thoroughfare to get into Port-au-Prince and around. That was one of the major roads. And here's this building hanging over. Well, I wanted to show you that picture because I took a picture of that as we were going in to see the presidential palace. And on our way out, we stopped again underneath this building. Now, granted, this building is just right above you on this major road. And the interpreter said, you know, he goes, that building right there, if you still look, and not to get graphic, but he goes, if you still look, you'll see a human leg sticking out. And I showed you that picture, and there wasn't a zoom up because, you know, that wouldn't be a good thing to see, but it just disturbed me terribly that people are going about their daily lives underneath this, and they see this every day. And I think the thing that impacted me is I know that, and I did a little research, I know that roughly 580 million has been given to the Haitian people. And this is not a, I don't want to say that an anti-government statement in any way, shape, or form. But there, I saw no heavy equipment. You'll see all the rubble and everything. Those are people that are doing that by hand to get that rubble out of there. And to see people having to still live, you know, going to work underneath something like that every day, that just disturbed me. But with the thing that I would like to end it on, with as a positive note, I really did enjoy the mission is doing something great, and even though they have lost so much, they're still opening up, you know, the schools, they're keeping everything open. So with that, I think it was a great trip. Ken had talked about doing a website for the Haitian mission, and I thought, well, what can I do? And, you know, one of the things I would like to do, and I've set it up with four of the churches here locally in the community, is I'd like to go, and I've asked Brandon to maybe help me with it, at least give a 10 or 15 minute presentation, because even though that money has been given and the mission is going forward and they're optimistic and they're doing wonderful things, there's still a lot that needs to be done. So my hope would be is to just continue and ask you guys to at least consider that. And thank you.
I just want to share with you guys a little bit of something that affected me a lot on the trip. Before I went on this trip, I didn't really feel like I had a direction in my life. I didn't know what I wanted to do or what God had for me. And on the trip, I feel like God made it really obvious what He wants me to do. We got to meet some kids, a lot of kids, and I completely fell in love with every single one of them. They all mean a lot to me. And we got to play with the kids, and we got to do duck, duck, goose, and ring around the Rosie, and all kinds of stuff. And it was just so amazing to be able to love them and interact with them and show them that, you know, somebody cares, because a lot of them haven't ever felt that before. So, one of the things I want to share with you guys, here's some more kids. one of the things I want to share with you guys is that I got to do a Sunday school one morning. I actually got to lead it for the kids, and I kind of shared with them a little bit about how they don't need to worry, because God's going to take care of them and provide them with clothing and food and everything that they need. And it was kind of hard for me to tell them this, because here I am looking at them and they don't have clothes or they don't have food, and I'm telling them that God's going to provide these things for them, and I feel like I'm lying to them. But when I was up there, you know, I kind of had to speak in short sentences because I had a translator and I wanted to just get the point across really clearly. And basically what I told them, I was just like, don't worry. You don't need to worry, because I promise that God's going to take care of you. And I personally made a promise, and I feel like I need to commit myself for the rest of my life to fulfill that promise. And these kids, they changed me, and they changed my life. And I feel like I want to spend the rest of my life to help them change their lives and make them better. And yeah, so.
Okay. We had a chance to do two VBSs. The first one didn't go as well as we had planned, but the second one went pretty good. And I was able to help the little kids with their crafts. And I was helping the preschoolers in the back, as you can see in the picture. And they were just, I showed them, they had to make a pouch, and they had to put yarn through the holes. And so I did the couple of holes, and then they were able to put the yarn through the rest of them. And it was really cool to see them, like, learn how to do that. And they're only, like, 3 or 4. And when we had finished the VBS, we had brought a suitcase full of stuff to pass out. There was jump ropes and balls and sandals. And so I had picked up some flip-flops to pass out, and they were little, so I was going back towards the preschoolers in the back of the room. And they all started surrounding me and were yelling, "Sandals, sandals." And, like, they started grabbing everything, and one of the translators actually had to pull me out because they were all trying to grab them. But one little girl, she didn't get any sandals, and she started crying because she didn't get any and because we ran out. And it just really broke my heart to see her crying over that, because I have 4 pairs of flip-flops amongst other shoes, and she only had the pair that she was wearing. And we as Americans are so lucky to have so much when they have nothing.
The high point of my experience in Haiti, and there's a lot of low points, was working in the clinic. And we didn't see that many around. I saw one dentist office. Click the picture. That's the only dentist office I saw. The mission that we camped out over had people lined up every day, several hundred people a day, just waiting for someone to take a look at what was wrong with them. The translator would tell me what was wrong with the people. I would ask them questions. Where does it hurt? How long have you had it? Does it itch? You know, what are you eating? And so many of them were telling me, you know, they had gas, they had this, they had that. And I had to bandage them and clean their wounds and give them medicine. So I would find out what was wrong as best I could. I would run over to the pharmacy and try to find something that would help them. And so many of them just needed some Pepto-Bismol. So that's the picture on the poop section there. We really take it for granted that we can just, you know, when we're not feeling good, we can just run to Walmart, get some Tums or some aspirin or Tylenol, and they don't have that. They can't go to the corner store and buy something to fix what's ailing them. And the only medicines that they had there were just like our basic things that we have here in America, but everything that they have has been donated. So when the donations run out, they're not going to have anything. And one little boy, I think about, he came in, his cheek was abscessed, and the first thing I'm thinking is, well, you know, swish with some salt water or something. They don't have that. They don't even have salt. They don't have water. They don't have just the basic necessities that we have in our kitchen cupboards. So this was my interpreter, Gilbert, and he really helped a lot. And I know he worked in that clinic quite a bit because he was very familiar with all the terminology, and he was just a really good guy to work with. So that's a picture of me looking for some kind of antibiotic to give someone. The clinic was open from 8 to 2 every day, and they triaged the patients that came in. put them in the order of, you know, who's the sickest, who's the worst off, and line them up. We started seeing patients promptly at 8 o'clock, and there was people in the hallways that hadn't been triaged yet. So we were just, you know, helping them as we were going through the hallways. And at 2 o'clock, the clinic was closed. If you didn't get seen, come back tomorrow. So a lot of these people just kind of hung out in hopes that someone would help them. There were so many things that I saw that day. Wow. The clinic closed. We went shopping for a little while after that. And then we came back for dinner. And Betty, the pastor's wife, said, "Hey, Melissa, there's a baby that's going to be born. Would you like to go watch? Do you want to help?" So Lisa and I went after dinner. We got our scrubs on, cleaned up, went down to the OB clinic that they have next to the mission. It's on the same property. And we helped to deliver a baby. And we held the mom's hand. We wiped her brow and told her she was doing a good job and all these things that there was no one else to help her there except the two midwives. So she had a few complications, but everything came out good. And we got into the room about 7 o'clock, or we went down to the clinic about 7. And she had that baby and was up and walking next door to her room at about 9:30, 10 o'clock. And she stayed one night. The next morning as we were leaving, she was leaving with her baby. And so we made sure we gave her a hug and told her good job. And it was just a really, that was the high point of the trip for me. And it just really kind of impacted me that the things that we take for granted here, aspirin, Tylenol, salt water, Pepto-Bismol, and how we need to be taking care of ourselves. We have a country that, you know, even if you don't have money, you can go and be seen by a real doctor. You might have to pay a hefty bill later on, but at least you're not dead. And these people had... they had a baby that had gotten sick the week before, and they sent it home with the mom, and the mom died. And because the mom died, the baby died. If they had a facility where they could have kept them overnight or had better equipment, that wouldn't have happened. So I'm just thankful that we have a country where we have health care, even if it's Obamacare. I'm thankful that we can go to Walmart and Walgreens and get medicine. And I just think it's important for us to care for people who can't care for themselves and don't have what we have. Even the poorest of poor here in our country have luxury compared to these people. So...
the midwives had come in and talked to Betty. I don't know if I told you this, but I said the midwives had come in and talked to Betty. And Betty was kind of translating for me because I just happened to be there. And one of the midwives looked at her and she said, "She's too young." I don't know how old the mom was, but she thought she was too young. It was amazing. When we're talking to people, you know, I talk to people here in America and I tell them I've got 5 kids. They're like, "Oh, my gosh, wow, 5 kids." When I was in Haiti, I said 5 kids and they didn't even blink at it. Because they have like 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. You know, it's pretty amazing. Because they have the mentality that the more people there are in the family, the more people there are to work. And they tend not to think about the fact that the more mouths there are to feed and so forth. So just real quick, so we can try to get out of here on time. This is real hard to see, but the man up in the left-hand corner is Stephen Profet, and the lady next to him is Betty. They are the founders of Haitian Christian Mission. They started about 30 years ago, and as we heard the story, they found it with $120 in their pocket. 30 years later, they've got over 50 churches all around Haiti. They have schools. They're in the process of building a university. They have the clinic there. They take in teams, medical teams, and they take them to Port-au-Prince. They take them into these village areas, and they let these medical teams take care of some of the issues, medical issues that are out there. These people are doing a lot for the country of Haiti. Right next to them is Edwins on the right side. He is their son, and he's the one who's kind of taken over the mission. He's organizing, particularly, I got his card, and it says the relief. He's the head of, or I can't remember what his official title was, but something like the relief organizer or something like that. But he does a lot more than just organize the relief. He's pretty much running the mission because his dad is now out teaching, preaching, and doing things like that. He told me that after the earthquake, with all the people dying, with the exodus out of Port-au-Prince, today the population of Port-au-Prince is larger than before the earthquake. The reason being is that for years now, Haiti has been the center of organizations coming in and handing out food and handing out clothing and shelter and stuff like that. And the mentality of the Haitians, and we saw this, the mentality of the Haitians is, give me. We're going to be taken care of by other people. And so after the earthquake, people start calling their families saying, hey, families out in the countryside say, hey, get over here. There's free food, there's shelter, and there's even talk that we're going to be getting houses. So get over here so we can get more. And so the population actually increased. Part of the reason why there's all these tents. Edwin's told me the government has actually, in some areas, has actually stopped allowing people to live in tents because of this. Edwin's also told me that research is being done, and it's being shown that actually there is more resources out in the outlying areas instead of in Port-au-Prince. And there's actually like warehouses of supplies and stuff that are sitting there and not being used because everybody's in Port-au-Prince. In fact, the Mennonite, there's a Mennonite mission not too far from the Haitian Christian mission. They brought a big truckload of medical supplies because they were just sitting in their mission. And so the Haitian Christian mission was able to use those. One thing it made me realize was, you know, as Christians, we want to help. And one of the first ways we think about helping is just sending our money or sending clothes or handing out food or something like that. And what Edwin's really taught me was that that is not the answer for the Haitian people. The answer is if we do want to help, because they do need the money, they do need the clothes, they do need the food, we need to find organizations within the country that are working on educating the people, on trying to help the people learn, well, have some pride in themselves, to be self-sufficient, to work hard. And I'm not saying they don't work hard, because we got to work alongside some Haitians, and they are hard workers, very hard workers. But there's this mentality. There's another. The only way I can describe it, and this may sound demeaning, but there's this like this slave mentality there still. If you know the history of Haiti, it was a slave nation. I mean, the French owned it. The French brought all the slaves from Africa there to work the plantations and stuff. And they were the first country for the slaves to rise up and boot out their oppressors. But they still have that mentality. When we got there, the first thing they were asking us, who's the leader? Who's the boss? That's what they go. Louis and I were the boss. We were the chefs, the chiefs. They wanted to know who the boss was, who the leader was. And the reason why is because they wanted to be told what to do, basically. Our first VBS was a disaster because our interpreters, who have done this type of thing over and over, just sat there waiting for us to tell them what to do. And I was sitting there, we were sitting there going, what are we supposed to do? You know? And it just flopped. I had to go and tell Betty. I just thought I was really disappointed with the way things went. She went and yelled at them. The next VBS was awesome. And Stephen Prophet, Pastor Prophet, is really trying hard to instill leadership skills in these men. He was talking about translating Bob Keith's leadership book into Creole. It was funny. He said, Bob Quest. And Louis was sitting there and he's like, Bob Quest. You mean Bob Keeston? And if you remember, Bob Keeston is the one that Louis goes with to Myanmar, the founding pastor of Kingman Christian Church. He's really into leader. Pastor Prophet is really into leadership training. He's trying to train these Haitians to be leaders, to be self-sufficient, to work. So I have made it my personal goal to not just go and hand out. We're going to go back. I'm not going to just go hand out food and stuff. We're going to go to help Haitian Christian Mission do the job that God has given them to do. And anything that we have, we're just going to funnel it through them because they know the people. They know how to distribute it. They know how what the people want. They know how to care for the people. We're planning another trip in December over Christmas. And it is open for people to come along, alongside of us or be part of the team. I think there's going to be more construction. In fact, I think that's probably something you're going to talk a little bit, right? I'm going to hand it over to you and let you finish up here.
I'm going to say a few really quick things because I know we're running late, and then got a couple of little things I want to give out to some people who deserve a little recognition. But yeah, one of the things that struck us when we got there was, it helped me clarify things in my own mind about my own sort of mission trips, is that, they need a lot of people to do a lot of work. And I mean hard physical labor. They build their homes by moving big, huge rocks, breaking them into slightly smaller rocks, sticking them in ditches, pouring cement on them, and then you put some more rocks. It's a lot of building. It's a lot of heavy labor. It's a lot of work. And a lot of the guys here, and I want to talk to the men for just a minute. A lot of guys said to me, "Well, yeah, I can't do a mission trip. I can't do anything. I can't teach." Well, you can do this. There's a lot of you that are used to working hard, and they need people that know how to paint, that know how to they're strong and they can work hard. In December, the weather will be a lot nicer than it was when we were there. But it's still going to be a tough trip. But if you are willing to go somewhere for about a week or so and really work hard, breakfast is at 6:30 a.m. So you're not sleeping in, you're not slacking off. Trust me, you're up with the sun, especially on the roof, because you really don't have any choice. And you go for it. I really want to encourage some of you men, take a try at this, take a shot at this. Second thing I wanted to say is, Brian said it, but I just have to reiterate it. I am so proud of our teenagers. These guys were amazing and awesome. All three of them, you need to shake their hands and thank them. Mandy didn't tell you, she volunteered to do that Sunday school. It was Sunday morning. They were off to the mountains where it was cooler, leaving the rest of us to suffer for Jesus. And and we said, "Hey, we got to do Sunday school. What are we going to do?" So, and Mandy said, "Yeah." And Melissa said she'd help. And they went off. And I said, "Good luck. Well, maybe we'll see you later if you survive." And they did a great job. She taught kids how to do Ring Around the Rosie without a translator. I have no idea how she did it, but she did it. And, and Katie was great working with the kids, and Brandon was fantastic, and he also watched out for the girls. He did a great job watching out for the kids and the girls, and I mean, they were just awesome. I could not be any prouder of them. And the whole team did really great. There's two people that I want to thank. One is not here this morning. Maybe she'll be in second service, I don't know. Karen Jensen. Karen, originally Karen and Shane wanted to go, medical background. They found out early they couldn't go, but Karen still did a ton of work to raise funds and help us to go. And I was going to give her a hat and a t-shirt, but she's not here, so maybe, I don't know if they'll be here next service, we'll give her that. The second thing is these t-shirts, which you've seen, Brian has one on and you see one here. These were arranged and put together for us at the last minute by Ruth. And Ruth did such a great job and has worked really hard. And by the way, Ruth's already lining up some stuff, and we're going to be talking to you in a couple of weeks about getting church shirts. Pretty cheap, we think, we hope. So, Ruth, I wanted to give you a little something. So come on up here for a second, if you would, please. We want to make sure you have at least a hat from the trip. Here's the official Haiti team hat. So we want to thank you so much for all the work that you did. And last and certainly least, I mean not least, Pastor Brian did a ton of work to prepare for this trip. And he was willing to do it, and I'm always happy to delegate and do nothing as long as other people work. So we said, sure, go ahead. So, I mean, he worked really hard on this. And when we got there, we found out that the lady, Wendy, who had been talking to, hadn't communicated everything to the prophets, and they didn't know, even know why we were there. And, I mean, it was really, it was hairy, and it could have been very discouraging, but he hung in there, and he did a great job leading and guiding, doing the VBS. It's the first VBS, like they said, was a disaster. I've seen a lot of bad things in 35 years plus of ministry. That was the worst thing I have ever seen in my... It's a new low in my ministry in Haiti. But the next one was awesome. It was really good. It was amazing. And just Brian worked really hard. So I wanted to thank him for something. So I've asked Chris if she'll come up here. And Brian, would you please step up here? We have a little gift we want to give you to thank you for all this. And I didn't have any like fancy paper to cover it up with, so I just used a Haiti t-shirt. And we just, something that I kind of figured you'd probably want. You can tear it open. There's a tab right there. Come on, big man. Yes, it's from Amazon.com. There you go. And guess what it is?
Oh my gosh, no way.
Tell them what it is.
It's a Kindle.
Brian and I have been talking about Kindles for about a year and a half. A Kindle, for those of you that don't, hold it up so they can see it. It's an e-reader. It's an electronic book reader. You can put about 15,000 books in there, or 1,500 or whatever it is. Tons of books, and it weighs like nothing. Now, there's a story behind this, I have to tell you. I had arranged with Melissa before the trip that we were going to do this, because I feel like you really earned it. And usually Melissa and I work really well together. She's awesome. I love her. And we got back, and Brian said, yeah, we want to do this report right away. So I thought, oh, man, I better hurry up and order this. So I ordered the Kindle. And when the email, you know, the confirmation email comes in saying you've ordered it, I forwarded it to Melissa so she'd know. I said, yeah, I ordered the Kindle. Then I took off about 3 hours later. I come back home. The email there says, oh, I already ordered him one. Okay, this is not good. So I went to Amazon, couldn't cancel it, because they were already processing the order. I could return it. But that means it has to actually come to my house and be in my hand before I can return it. And we've been talking about this for, what, a year and a half at least? Both are like, oh, man, I want a Kindle. It's become like a joke between us. That's half a Kindle. You know, we had to spend $100. Oh, I kept it. Bad pastor. So, between what I spent on my Kindle and yours, I now have one Kindle, but I paid for one and a half. But anyway, God has just done great things, and Brian will be heading up the next trip. If you got any questions, talk to him, talk to us. Next Sunday, before my sermon, I'm going to show a few pictures of my own, kind of happy, funny pictures, so I know this has been kind of an intense presentation, but thank you so much. We're just going to close in prayer real quick, because we're running really late, so let's just pray. Father God, thank you for the people that went on this trip. They were just great. God, it was, from my perspective, Lord, looking at these people, some of whom had never even been out of the country, much less in the third world. I just thank you, God, because you gave them the strength and the wisdom and the ability, and I'm proud of every single one of them. And I just pray you will bless them. And Father, bless this new relationship that's beginning between KCC and the Haitian Christian Mission. May it be a way where not only we can help them, but you will use Haiti and other places, Romania and other places where you're going to send us to change us so that we can come back to Kingman and really be the disciples you want us to be here and change Kingman as well as Haiti and Myanmar and Romania and wherever else you send us, God. We thank you for Jesus, and we pray that you will bless our brothers and sisters in Haiti today. In Jesus' name, amen.